Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 20th. I'm John Gibson, and joining me from Tokyo back in town is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Yeah, I'm in the house. Okay, I'm in my house. I'm in my, even better, I'm in my mansion.
So your man cave.
Japanese people in Japan don't have a man cave, no. No, but in my mansion. So those of you familiar with Japan will know what that means. And so anyway, yeah, back and raring to go and having fun watching baseball again. It was both restful and paranoia inducing not to be able to watch any baseball for a week.
I'm going to take a vacation in July, right during All-Star week, and it's going to just about kill me. But I'm not going out of the country.
It would kill you. Hold on a second. It would kill you not to watch the All-Star games.
Well, there actually are the games during the All-Star week. Yeah. Yeah. The All-Star games, I'm going to watch them. But yeah. I'll be fine when the All-Star games come on. It's just those games that are leading up to the All-Star game. And then just after that, I'll be missing or not have easy access to that are going to be a difficult problem.
Okay.
But we'll be okay. I'll get through it. On this week's show, we've got a great interview with Pierce Johnson of Hanshin. We're going to discuss the Tigers a little bit, take a brief look at the CL and the PL, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, so on Wednesday, I went to Tokyo Dome and caught up with Pierce Johnson. And man, have you met him yet?
Nope.
He is genuinely a great guy. I mean, really as friendly a person as I've ever met in Japan since I've been here. And I mean, including Japanese natives and everyone. I just really, really nice guy. He asked about me. In fact, he asked about me before I could get any questions out about him. And we chatted. I think all in all, we talked for more than 30 minutes, and out of the watchful eye of the PR staff, you know, because you know what will happen with the Hanshin Tigers people, but we were in the back, so they didn't see us, so we were able to talk for a long time. He's a first-year reliever. He's from Colorado. He played with the Cubs and the San Francisco Giants before coming to MPB, and he and his wife, Christina, are expecting their first child in October. So we were talking about kids and names and all kinds of stuff. A lot of stuff not baseball related we were talking about, too. And as you will hear a little bit about in the chat, talking about him trying to learn Japanese as well. And so if the Tigers are not in the playoffs and they're expecting a baby in October, that'll work out really well for them. If not, if they are in the playoffs and they end up going deep into the playoffs, maybe he's going to miss a birth or something. We'll have to see how that goes. Or maybe he's going to miss a game. Who knows? But he has really been a shutdown guy for first-year skipper Akihiro Yano, and it's a really big boost to the bullpen. And I picked the Tigers to finish second in the CL, so if they do, I think it'll be because he and the bullpen have done a good job in helping getting them there. But anyway, he came to Japan because he wasn't getting a lot of time in MLB, but he gave us plenty of time. So let's have a listen to what he had to say. All right, we are standing in Tokyo Dome with Pierce Johnson of the Tigers. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I noticed it was your birthday last week and you had a really good inning, a 2-strikeout inning against the Dragons the other night. So good for that, and happy happies.
Hey, thank you very much. It was a great way to celebrate my birthday with 50,000 fans maybe. I don't know. It was, what a day. It was great.
Cool. All right, so this is your first year in Japan. What is something early on that might have happened in camp or sometime early in the preseason that you said, whoa, this is different?
How much they play catch and how much they like to run. I mean, people told me about it coming over here. You know, before I got here, they were like, you know, just be ready. You're going to run a lot. You're going to throw a lot. I'm like, that's all right. You know, I'm used to doing that kind of stuff. And Okinawa was a little humid and I was dying for a little bit, but it was a great time.
All right. Now, I noticed your numbers in the minor leagues. You were a starter and then you transitioned to the bullpen. So why was that transition something that had to take place?
Well, at the time, the Cubs, that was in 16 when the Cubs had, you know, obviously won the World Series, but their starting rotation was phenomenal, and really nobody got hurt. And, you know, in the minor leagues, the only way you get called up is whether there's a trade or an injury, and everybody was throwing well and healthy, so things weren't really going my way. And I had struggled a little bit that year. We were trying to change some things mechanically, and they were like, you know, let's put you in the pen and maybe get you up here in September, maybe playoffs, we'll see what happens. And you know, it didn't work out, but is what it is. And then the following year came back and I was told I was a reliever, and been there ever since.
Okay, now how's that transition for you?
It was tough at first. It was really tough at first because, you know, as a starter you have a routine, you have, you know, the full day to get prepared, get ready. As a reliever, they call your name, you're in two batters later, and you know, there it is. So,
and you're expected to get those guys out.
exactly. So the transition was pretty tough at first. But, you know, at the time we had some really good veterans that kind of showed me the route and things to do, things not to do, you know, always be locked in and, you know, kind of know your role so that when that time comes, you know, you're 100% ready to go.
Not slow your role, but know your role. All right.
Exactly.
All right. So what's your role here and how do you get ready for your outings?
So my role here has been setup guy for the most part. I've faced kind of the heart of the lineup a lot, and it's been fun. It's been challenging, and it's been a blast. But, you know, I stretch. I come to the field early, do all my foam roll, stretching, band work, everything I need to do. And then sixth inning, I'm always stretching. I have a routine and halfway through the sixth. And then, you know, depending on the situation, whatever comes, you know, I gotta be ready and get on the mound.
Now, I was listening on the radio to one of your games, and the announcer said, Yano, the manager, didn't want you around or on the bench, at least anywhere he could see you, because if he saw you, he'd want to put you in the game. So they had them send you home. So I'm just wondering, what's that whole process?
Well, I have honestly never had that before, but it was crazy. I had thrown first eight days in May, so I had never done that in my life. And I had been thrown fairly well, but I was pretty gassed. And Yano gave me the day off, and it was much needed for sure. But I didn't leave. I still got everything done I needed to do, and then I just sat in the bullpen in the corner so they couldn't see me. And I watched the game, and... you know, Randy had a complete game that day, so he really saved the whole bullpen. So everybody got a day off that day.
All right. I noticed something about your pitching. You're fearless in starting a batter. I mean, essentially pitching backwards, but throwing your secondary stuff or an off-speed pitch. Is that something that you're trying to work in, or the catchers are telling you to do, or the team is that's part of their strategy?
No, not really. I mean, that's something that I've done in the past. My breaking ball is probably my best pitch. I mean, I guess it really depends on the day, but you know, I don't throw 100, but I throw fairly hard. I just want to be able to throw strikes, and if I can start a guy off with a breaking ball and steal a strike and I'm ahead, I mean, it's really just a game changer, because my goal is really just first pitch strikes and win the 1-1 count. Because if you look at statistically, if a pitcher's ahead, the batting average is way down. And if, you know, you throw the first pitch strike, you are obviously ahead. So really just throwing strikes and trusting my stuff. And I think, you know, that's just been the biggest thing for me.
Now, you've got some pitchers on the team like Hyuji Fujikawa. You've obviously got Randy Messenger. You've got Rafael Dolis. What was your impression of these pitchers on the team when you joined up?
Well, I had met QG back in the States because I was with the Cubs when he was there, and we were actually rehabbing at the same time.
Yeah, because he got Tommy John right when he got there.
Right,
a lot
right?
of Japanese pitchers do.
Yeah, so it was nice, you know, having a familiar face. And then Randy actually contacted me before season, before I actually headed out here. So he kind of gave me, you know, the lowdown of what to do, what to bring, you know, what to look out for, you know, do that kind of stuff. So he's been a great mentor for me and a great friend. QG's been phenomenal. Dolis, obviously, you know, has had a lot of success over here. So talking to him on what to do and everything like that. So everybody has been super welcoming and super helpful.
Now, you talked about the fact that you had pitched a lot early in May. Is there a workload management situation that goes on here, or a process for the pitchers in managing their workloads?
Not really. I mean, really just...
Get out there
and throw strikes. And, you know, all our pitchers have been throwing the ball really, really well. We kind of started off a little slow, and I think as the weather's gotten warm, we've started to turn it on. So, you know, for me to get the opportunities to pitch in the situations that I am, you know, I'm I'm super happy about it, and I'm just trying to go out there every day and throw strikes.
Now you guys finally got a victory against the Giants last night, and that was a long time coming. How much of that, how much of a topic was that as you guys prepared for this little two-game series here?
You know, we hadn't talked about it as much, but, you know, everybody knew about it. It's kind of like the elephant in the room. But, you know, this is a really good lineup that they have here, and obviously their pitchers are really good. I mean, the guy yesterday, the starter, he's a rookie, and, you know, watching him pitch, yeah, he's got some great stuff, and he's going to be pitching for a long time. So, you know, facing guys like that, and I think we got Sagano today we're facing, so excited to watch him pitch, but, you know, hopefully we get the best of him.
All right, last one here. Who's the guy? I know you hang out with probably the relievers more than the starters, but in that pitching group, who's the guy who's the clown? Who's the serious guy? Who's the guy who relaxes everybody?
I guess I'm kind of the clown.
You should have seen him. Yeah. He kind of looked off to the side.
Well, it's fun because I've really enjoyed trying to learn the language, and obviously I'm terrible at it as of right now. So the guys are getting, you know, a lot of laughs out of me in the bullpen because I'm coming in saying something in Japanese, and obviously it's wrong, and I'm like, you know, everybody's laughing about it. So, but, you know, QG does a really good job of that too. He's been here a long time, and everybody respects him and his success here. And then Dolis is, you know, a clown too. But, you know, we all do a really good job of turning it on when we need to be serious. So I would say definitely I would be in the mix of that, but we got some other guys too.
Well, I feel like you guys are serious contenders this year, so we'll keep an eye on you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks for the chat.
Thank you.
All right, so I love that he did the Hiroki Iwase go home treatment, and or he got that treatment, and I love it even more that he said he didn't leave the park and he hid in the corner of the bullpen out of sight. That's awesome. But what stuck out in the interview for you?
Well, first of all, I want to say what great questions, and I really enjoyed that. Of course, one of the ones that I often try to get to, which is who's, tease out some of the personality on the team.
Right.
It rarely works.
Yeah, and as soon as I asked that question, I wish we had video because he starts looking around. He's like, let's see. I could tell by the look on his face that he was the guy because he just like, huh, other than me? Who could it be?
Exactly. Yeah, I know that one. Yeah, I've been there. So anyway, yeah, a bunch of things. I think, you know, it's nice that, you know, he could have a birthday and celebrate with 40,000 of his close personal friends.
Who weren't booing.
Yeah.
Because he did something.
Another one was I'm not surprised that he's the class clown in the bullpen because his description of spring training.
Mm-hmm.
The little end remark of spring training. I was dying, but I loved it. Yeah, it killed me. Yeah, I mean, it's like it was the worst thing I ever experienced, but I'm better for it.
Right. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Exactly. And then I guess the other one is just in general, you have to love the annotated answers. And by that I mean, the answer is this is what happened,
mm-hmm.
and this is why it happened.
Right.
The stuff with the Cubs. Oh, you know, this was the situation, and this is why the situation existed. Okay, that was pretty interesting. And of course, it's always great to have somebody who actually answers the question. So when you say, "Okay, who's helped you?" and we know those guys will say, "Oh, guys."
Guys and coaches, yeah.
Exactly. And which ones? Oh, you know. No, we don't. That's why we're asking the question. Oh, you know, guys. Okay, all right, guys.
Yeah, I'm not going to disparage any of our guests from the past.
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying.
I'm not mentioning any names.
No. But my point is that. It's like it's just going somewhere where they just don't want to go.
Mm.
You know, it's like it's always fun to be on that wavelength when the guy is really not only is willing to answer the question, but wants to answer the question and wants to answer it in a way that you understand what he means.
Mm.
So I loved it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the compliment on the questions. I promised the listeners I'd be better next time. So I came up with some better questions and I went in prepared. But yeah, I suppose it's true. It just depends. It depends. A lot of times I try not to ask questions that are going to cause the interviewee to repel because they don't want to give out too much information. So, because there are questions certainly that we could ask that they don't want to answer publicly, or that they don't want to give out too much information.
Sure. Which batter do you want to hit the first chance you get? You know, that's always, you get some interesting answers to that, but really nothing you're going to be able to put it on the podcast.
Right. But, I think for me, the thing that stood out was that he told us that there isn't a workload management situation going on in Hanshi. Now, maybe there isn't one for him. We heard about what was going on at Yakult with David Huff. And you understand that these guys do get tired. I mean, he said he was gassed. And I thought, that's an interesting way to phrase it, because you don't think of a relief pitcher being gassed because he's running so hard. You know, when I say gassed, when I hear gassed, I hear, I think somebody has really, really spent their energy and is just exhausted and from running too hard or doing something too hard. But just, it doesn't seem like throwing an inning here and there every other day or every day would get you gassed. But he said he had thrown a lot of consecutive days and he needed that time off. So, but I will try to keep an eye as we go forward on what Hanshin and Yano are doing with that bullpen, and to see how many guys are getting used in games they're winning, games that are still close, whether they're winning or losing, or games that they have a sizable lead in, or vice versa. So, I just look at these bullpens, and we'll get into a little bit later. Hopefully, I think with Hanshin, they have some really good young arms in the bullpen and in the rotation, and guys who are just waiting to get spot starts here and there. I think they have a real big stable of young, good arms, and so it just was kind of surprising, because for Yano, and I remember, talking to him when he was a Dragons backup catcher, and then when he went over to Hanshin.
Wow, that's in the before time.
Yeah, a long time ago. And he just seems to me like a kind of micromanager type. And I can't believe that doesn't have his hands in every single facet of what's going on. So for there to be no maybe hard and fast plan for the bullpen, or just use them as you go and we'll make adjustments, that doesn't seem very Yano-like to me. But I haven't spoken with him in, I would say, recently, in maybe 5-6 years. So I haven't spoken with him a lot or done an interview. I think the last interview I did with him was more than 10 years ago. Ooh. So, that'll be interesting, and I'll try to keep an eye on that. But that was the thing that really stayed with me, besides him hiding in a corner of the bullpen. I thought that was really funny. I'm not here. You can't see me.
Well, I've had a lot of relievers, talk about that. I mean, David Huff was a surprise, but I have had a couple of course, the big one was when the SoftBank Hawks switched from Koji Akiyama to Kimiyasu Kudo, and Kudo with Masato Yoshii as the bullpen coach, the bullpen pitching coach. They had definitely had plans in how they were going to keep the relievers healthy, and well, at least they had a plan to keep them healthy,
right,
or at least to keep them rested. And with Akiyama, it was more like, we've talked about it before, oh, well, I know you pitched 3 days in a row, but are you okay today? Yeah.
And I remember with the Dragons, it was Ochi, and I first heard that where I was listening to a radio broadcast on that one as well, and I heard the color analyst say, well, they didn't want to use him today, so they sent him home. Because if he's on the bench, if he's visible, it means he's available. And Ochi said he'd want to use him, so send him home. Get him out of here. Get him out of my face so I don't put him in a game and break him.
Wow. It's like you wonder if there's some sort of circle of ex-managers, you know, some sort of society, bullpenners, anonymous or something.
Anonymous, huh?
Hi, my name's Hiromitsu Ochiai, and I've
well, if it's anonymous, I don't think they'll use his last name, but go ahead.
Well, you know, it is. Oh, well, okay.
Not that he wouldn't already be known anyway.
I've exhausted relief pitchers. Hi, Hiromitsu.
Why do you think you did that?
And we're not here to judge.
Yes, even though my name is Hitoki.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay.
All right, well, let's talk about the Tigers a little bit. Now, they ran into kind of a, well, not kind of, they ran into a hot carp team and fear the fish because they got swept.
Indeed.
They got swept this weekend. But so they're at 500, 21-21 as we speak now here on Sunday night. We touched on it briefly last week, I think, but with Yano being able to put in Koji Chikamoto in center and Seiya Kinami mostly at shortstop during the season so far, that makes him look like a really smart manager. Those two have been fairly consistent. I think Chikamoto is obviously their front runner for Rookie of the Year in the Central League. I don't know if he's the front runner, but he is having a really good season. He's around 280 right now. But you know what I noticed about him is he only has 13 walks. So at least through, I think, Friday's games, he only had 13 walks. And so his on-base percentage was about .338. That's kind of low for a guy who's hitting leadoff for you a lot. But
for a rookie,
he is a rookie, and he's going through his, you know, his first MPB full-time situation. So I'm not overly concerned about that because he is really hitting. He's hitting a lot more, and he started it in spring. In the spring games, and he has carried that into the regular season. And he's been very consistent for a rookie with the Tigers. So that's good. Now, Yoshio Itoi, my man, slammed into a wall in foul territory on Saturday. And so he's a little bit banged up. That's a concern. And, you know, I was there on Wednesday at Tokyo Dome. And I think Itoi is the guy who's really seeming to concern me because he didn't look very fluid in his movements at that time. So he banged into the wall on Saturday. I think they just really need to give him some rest. And they have, a number of outfielders they can just plug in and let them play and let him get healthy. So that's one aspect. But what have you seen?
But they have to decide they want to do that, though.
Mm.
And that's something they haven't been able to do.
No. And again, with their, as well as they played and as much, they look better than they did last year all around, I think. And but you consider all those things and then you look at the record at 500 and you think, well, what's the problem? And again, they started out the first week, it looked like I joked when one of our longtime listeners Glenn sent a question in, I said about the overreactions. I said, well, it looked like the Tigers would never score a run. They were just going to lose every game 2-0.
Sure.
And of course, they broke out and started to score a little bit more regularly. But that is their issue when they lose games. It's because they don't score. It's not normally because they get pummeled and outscored early. It's because they don't score at all. And I think that was the case today. They lost 5-1. So.
I want to call them the Funky Tigers.
The Funky Tigers? Wash your animals.
Because, you know, I track how many, you know, their offense and what their opponents hit against them and how they hit against them. And in terms of their hits and walks, extra base hits, steals, strikeouts, and so on, and the same for their opponents, they should be about a 5-12 team. 0.512. That should be their winning percentage.
Oh.
So through Saturday, just based on what they did, not the actual runs scored, but how many, you know, runs they should have scored with that and how many runs they should have given up with those with their offense opponent's offensive numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And But they've been very inefficient in actually scoring runs and allowing runs. So that's kind of skewed. You know, they haven't done well in that area. But they've been hyper-efficient in winning games with the number of runs they've actually scored and allowed. So their actual winning percentage after Saturday was 0.512.
Wow.
And I've never seen that. So I thought that was kind of weird. The other thing about the Tigers, which is kind of interesting, they're a good base stealing team,
mm-hmm.
A good percentage base stealing team. They draw walks. They're second in NPB in triples with nine behind the Dragons, who have more. And the Tigers have lost six runners on the bases who weren't caught stealing or picked off.
Okay,
and that's the third fewest in NPB.
So they're not running into outs like some of our.
Yeah, they're not running into a lot of outs, and they're stealing bases well.
Mm-hmm.
So and they're drawing a bunch of walks, and it's kind of weird. But the three teams who have had the fewest runners, who have run into the fewest outs on the bases, are all good percentage base. They're the Lions, the Swallows, and the Tigers.
Mm.
Okay. They have these things in common. They're all good base stealing teams.
Uh-huh.
Or good percentage base stealing teams. They don't run in doubts, of course, because that's how they're ranked. And they draw a lot of walks. It's like I don't want to say that they're playing smart, but it sure seems like they're playing smart.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing things they're not making bad outs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not making outs at the plate because they're forcing opposing pitchers to throw strikes. So I really like those kinds of offense. It had not occurred to me that the Tigers would be one of those because they have trouble scoring. But before we go out and say, you know, they're smart, and I don't want to cast pejoratives on Japanese teams that bunt a lot, because I'll have to say I don't exactly understand all that's going on.
Okay.
But the Tigers are the buntingest team in NPB. Yano loves his bunts.
Bunt cage. Let's make some.
Exactly. And I understand if you play at Koshien that you being able to bunt in a typically low run environment, that's a useful skill, because if you can bunt, and you know, when home runs are scarce and you can bunt and your opponents can't, that's an advantage. But they do love the bunt.
Yeah. Also, I think in part because they have such a good pitching staff that they can decide to play for a run here and there a little bit more than other teams. And that, you know, they figure they can if they get that one run, it can make a big difference, whether it's tying the score up or taking a one-run lead, whereas some other teams might think, "Well, we need you know, one run is not going to do it for us. We're either behind by more than one already, or our pitching staff isn't good enough that we can feel comfortable with a one-run lead."
Yeah, that's actually it's funny, because I had a chat with Alex Ramirez a couple of years ago, an interview, and we were talking about this, and he said basically a big factor is who's pitching for the other team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're really good, maybe we'll try to get one run, you know, and figure, and you know, because we might not get a run or something. But I found in general, it's the opposite. It's a bigger factor of whether teams bunt or not is who's pitching for them.
Yeah.
And not who the opponent is.
Right. Right.
So
makes sense to me.
It just supported what you said, so I'm not surprised that it makes sense to you. But yeah, that was interesting, and so the Tigers are a big bunting team, and then the Lions and the Swallows are the opposite. The Swallows are the team that the Central League team that doesn't bunt, and the Lions are the team. The Lions are on track to have the fewest bunts to have it equal the fewest bunts since like 1993. And of course that was last year, and that was also the Lions. So they're on track now to have about 41 bunts during the season, which is amazingly few for a Pacific League team. So
good. Stop giving away outs is what I say, unless you've got a team like the Dragons, and you probably should think about bunting a little bit more in certain situations, but we'll get to that maybe sometime tonight, maybe sometime in the coming weeks, if the Dragons can stay relevant, which I doubt. But you know, there was one other thing I wanted to mention, and it was part of the Pierce interview, and that's the Fujikawa situation. And I actually thought about this before the season started, because another guy who's almost the same age as Fujikawa, and that's Ryota Igarashi of the Yakult Swallows, who was kicking around. I saw an interview with him in preseason as well, and he was kicking around, and he said the phone rang, and he recognized the number, and that it was from the Swallows, and he picked it up, and they said, "We really want to have you come and join the team," and blah, blah, blah. So he ended up back with the Swallows. And at some point, I think you did a tweet, or we talked about it, that he was 5-0 out of the bullpen, which was kind of crazy.
Correct. He was. I believe he is still leading the Central League in wins. So
wins. So he and Kyuji are almost the same age. I think Kyuji is going to turn 39 in July.
Igarashi's tied for the third oldest pitcher in NPB. The oldest pitcher in NPB is Koji Uehara of the Giants, and number two is Daisuke Yamai.
Oh, yes.
And tied for number three, because they were born on the same day, or is it Igarashi and Atsushi Nomi?
Who will be 30, no, they're going to be 40 in a couple weeks? No, next week? Yep.
Next week, that's right.
By the time the next show, yeah. So
and then I guess Kyuji Fujikawa is coming up after that.
Right, right.
And he doesn't seem old, because he's just got kind of a baby face, and he's got the big smile, and he's so friendly.
All right, you say so, but I just remember a couple of things about Kyuji, and that was when he came back to Japan, he didn't even try to come back to NPB immediately after his time in the major leagues. He joined the Kochi Fighting Dogs.
Yeah, he went to independently.
And then his first year back in NPB, I remember talking to a foreign player about him. That player shall remain nameless. But this foreign player said, "Well, I'm not impressed with QG's pitching, and I don't think he'll be around very long." And that was 2016. And you look at Fujikawa, he's basically been very consistent through the time that he's been back. So this is his fourth year back. And
yeah, the only sort of blip in that was their Kanemoto's. I think Kanemoto had a dream one night in which Fujikawa was a starting pitcher, and he figured it must have been reality, because for a couple of weeks they were trying him as a starting pitcher last year.
If you hadn't said that, I would not have remembered, but yes, I do recall that. That was interesting at the very least here. But yeah, I mean, he has been a really steady presence in that bullpen, and they use him in different situations to get out of, you know, they bring him in with runners on base. They bring him in the start innings. They bring him in the tie games. They bring him in when they're maybe a one run down to get holds. They bring him in different situations. So it's really fun to watch these older guys who are quite, they're marvels, if you ask me, getting the job done as they approach their 40s. I didn't think about Daisuke Yamai, but obviously I don't think he has pitched for the Dragons in a little while, since he had a little trouble there. I think they were trying to use him a little bit too much as a starter, and that's not going to work. But they've gotten him some rest and changed him out for a 19-year-old through today, right? So that might work a little bit better. But, the Tigers, they look like, to me, like a playoff team, and they just need to be consistent in terms of getting the runs going. You talk about the bunting. I'm thinking, that makes sense to me. They're not a really strong offensive team, and we actually have a question about them that I'll save some of these comments for later on in the show. But I think they're going to be fine. They look like a really strong team to me.
Okay. I mean, I don't know, but yeah, I'm not surprised by anything they do. I like a lot of the young players, and I still think really the biggest problem the Tigers have had in the last probably 6 or 7, maybe 7 or 8 years is their inability to commit to young players and just throwing two guys out there and letting them play.
Mm.
I mean, the first year Kanemoto was manager, I thought, wow, he's turning the corner. And then all of a sudden the guys who were, you know, one guy got hurt and the other guy didn't do this or didn't do that. And nobody's seen them again. In fact, I think they have a punishment box over at Naro Stadium where they take the guys from the first team who disappoint them and they seal them up.
Yeah, I think a lot of times with Kanemoto is like, don't miss a sign. You know, you can make a physical error, but don't commit a mental error like missing a sign. You'd be in some big trouble. But I get the idea that Yano's more forgiving, and that if these young players have some of these mental gaffes, that they can still make up for it. But it seemed like with Kanemoto, you miss a sign. That's like that's like committing murder. We don't let you go.
Wow.
You don't get to go home after that happens.
You miss a sign and the police be waiting.
Right. All right. Elsewhere in the Central League, I did notice that the Bay Stars are doing more good, or they did more good this weekend than bad, especially on the mound. But they swept a series at Jingu against the Swallows. And it was kind of annoying tonight to see Haruhiro Hamaguchi out there trying to get this shutout in a 7-0 situation. They're winning, and I'm thinking, you know, it's fine and good to say it's all about the team, but, you know, when we see these things happening and they're obvious, and it's very annoying, so I tweeted something out. But I did like the fact that Cocktail, the kid we call Cocktail, Taiga Kamichatani, overcame an early gopher ball and won 11-6 on Saturday, and that was his first pro win. And, you know, we call him Cocktail because I said his name looks more like a drink than something that I would see on a baseball field. And I don't think I told you about this, but there was an event we had recently at the office, and we all went out to this restaurant, and there was a drink on the menu that was eerily similar to Kamichatani in its sound.
Okay.
There were like 5 syllables, and it had Chatani at the end, and I don't remember what the name of the drink was because I'm so focused and fixed on remembering Kamichatani as a name, so I don't remember exactly what it was, but I meant to tell you that. It was really funny how I went out and said, this is why I call the guy Cocktail.
Yeah, great, yeah. You just heard him say, we call him Cocktail. Sean calls him Cocktail. I had to ask him, who are you talking about? So I appreciate you being inclusive, you know, and being my buddy, but don't shy away from this. Is your invention.
Don't loosely throw away the term we.
Yeah, you got to take credit for that that invention.
All right. Well, you know, it was really interesting, I think, with the Bay Stars going in and taking on the Swallows at the time, because the Bay Stars really had a miserable, I don't know, opening of May. They just really struggled. And it just seemed that was the worst place for them to go, and they end up sweeping that series. So good for them. I know Neftali Soto hit for power there in that series. And so good to see them do that, and good to see those young pitchers for the Bay Stars do well.
Yeah, I think as far as Kamichatani goes and his shutout today.
Cocktail.
Yes. You go with that.
Embrace it.
Okay.
Embrace it, bro.
Okay. I have no response to that. The Bay Stars pitcher going for a shutout. You know, he finished, I think, 127 pitches in that area. So
I thought it was 123. I'll check.
Okay, but I'm just saying, 120. I mean,
yeah, 123.
The guy pitches once a week.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
120 pitches. Okay, let him have his shutout. Okay, now if he gives up a three run, you know, if he gives up a grand slam, okay, take him out. Okay, fine, no problem. But and he did nearly give up two runs in the end, but he was saved by Tomohito Sakho's nice catch in left field.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, the point is, I'd be freaking out if he was at 140 pitches, because I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen that, like, okay, one more pitch and he's out of this. Oh, no, he's not. Okay, one more batter and he's, oh, no, he's not.
Yeah.
You know, that's Hiroki Kokubo managing. So anyway, so that was that. So that was interesting. Yeah, I did note that they swept the Swallows, and that's good for them. It was nice seeing Alex Ramirez walk off the field at Jingu, you know, like the old days.
Oh, that's
you know,
right,
like,
yeah.
You know, like when he got his 2000th hit there,
yeah.
And when he played for the Swallows. It was really nice. Not so much. But anyway, so that was good. And the other thing I guess I want to think about, the Carp have now won their seventh straight game.
Right, yep, seven
and,
in a row.
And they got a weird win today. Well, not a weird win, but they had Makoto Ajua through seven scoreless innings without a strikeout.
Mm.
And I was thinking, how often does that happen? And the answer is not very often. And the last guy who did it isn't in Japan anymore. They had to move. No, I'm kidding about that. He isn't in Japan, but it's not like they got rid of him. And that was Kazuhisa Makita of the Cebu Lions through in April 2013.
There we go. Don't say 19.
April 2013, Kazuhisa Makita threw a complete game shutout without striking out a bat.
Wow, yeah. All right.
Wow.
Man.
Okay.
I didn't realize that because he did get a lot of strikeouts, but he was the kind of guy who just threw the ball in the zone low, and he said, you know, you go ahead and hit it because you're going to beat it into the ground. So,
well, yeah, and hopefully it doesn't find a hole. You know, those pitchers will – there's a class of pitchers who do well when they've got – who tend to do well when they've got really good defenses behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And teams that score are reliable scoring runs. Bill James used to call them a Tommy John. They were usually left-handers who you couldn't steal against.
Right.
And he used to call them the Tommy John family of pitchers. I've seen a few right-handers in that group, but you'll see those are the guys. And they're usually typically ground ball. You know, in America, they'd be sinker ballers. Here, they might throw a sinker, which is, in fact, a screwball.
Right.
They call a sinker in Japan. But, yeah, curveballs keep guys who throw fastballs low in the zone and a lot of curveballs and such. So that type works. And the problem is when they play for teams with bad defenses, then they don't get enough outs. They don't get enough of those marginal outs to stay out of big innings. So anyway, so that was interesting. And another interesting thing I noticed, I look, as I said earlier, with the Tigers, I look and see what teams do, you know, the kinds of offense they have and the kind of offense they allow. And the top-rated team in Japan right now is the Yomiuri Giants.
Hmm.
And, of course, you have to take that with a grain of salt because they play in a league that's the weak league.
Right.
And, I don't know that's true. But I haven't seen anything to make me believe that it isn't.
I've seen one thing.
Go ahead.
And that is Swallows pitcher Hirotoshi Takanashi of the Swallows come over from the Fighters and struggle here in the Central League for some reason. And actually, Yuki Nishi I thought would be more dominant in the Central League, and he hasn't been. But those are just two guys.
He's also been an up and down guy in the Pacific League, and but I hear you. I mean, Ryo Akiyoshi's got seven saves for the Fighters, so there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, but I'm just saying that overall,
certainly,
it's a tougher competition. I think more of the teams are better in the Pacific League.
I agree.
Than they are in the Central League.
I agree.
So, okay.
Yeah, so yeah, I just wanted to mention that I think part of the reason the Carp have been winning so many games is A. Seiya Suzuki and Xavier Bautista have both gotten
hot. Probably Xavier Bautista.
Okay, but they've both gotten hot at the same time. And
Suzuki's now leading the Central League in the Triple Crown numbers, just as Hayato Sakamoto was a few weeks ago.
So. Right. It only took a week. Yeah, we were talking about that. So those guys getting hot at the same time. And that's a team that also puts a lot of runners on base. And so if those guys start to hit with any kind of pop in the middle of the lineup, which they are doing at the moment, that's going to result in some runs scored consistently. And the thing I noticed about Bautista is when the one year that he kind of broke out when there were a lot of foreign players doing well with Hiroshima, he hit a lot of off-speed pitches for home runs, especially late in games. It seemed like he was winning a lot of games with walk-off home runs. But now that he's getting more consistent time, it looks like they're trying to beat him with fastballs up, and he's catching up to him, and he's putting a good swing on him, and he's looking good, so he's looking much better. I just would like to see him play a little bit better defense.
Okay.
But, okay.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jim Allen. If you like the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, you'll love jballallen.com. My website is full of writing and research on Japanese baseball. And now, if you subscribe and send me an email telling me you heard about my website on this podcast, I will add an extra month to your regular 2-month subscription. Thanks for your support, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Let's make a two-seam transition and just take a brief look at the Pacific League. And I just wanted to mention one thing, actually, and that's the team I like to pick on a lot, and that's the Oryx Buffaloes, and that is with an L-O-W-S at the end.
Yeah. Because, well, you know, we talked about this last week, and I did tweet about the fact that we talked about it last week, and I think I wrote about it on my website that we talked about it, but I'm watching this inning and I'm hearing, you know, because basically to recap it for you all, I said last week that overall the Buffalo's defensive pitching and defensive numbers are very good.
Mm-hmm.
And John said, yeah, but they're really bad at times. They're like I'm not paraphrasing you, but you know, they're like the really good looking car that sometimes just doesn't run.
Or the Bad News Bears.
Yeah. So, they had the defensive game from hell the other day.
And that would have been on Thursday against the Lotte Marines, a game they lost 9-2. Yeah. Go ahead.
And they had an inning where we saw three balls hit off the heel of gloves. We had one was the one was
those
the
were the
right
good ones.
Field.
Yeah.
Those
were the good errors.
This is not just the balls that went through they could have had, but they were not in the right place. But there was a catch in right field that should have been made, and the guy tried to catch it with the heel of the glove, and then the shortstop tried to catch a throw from his teammate with the heel of his glove, and then the third baseman tried to field a ball with the heel of his glove. And so that was going on, and then to cap it off, Takahiro Okada tried to catch the ball by letting it go through his legs at first base.
He tried to catch the ball with the right fielder.
Exactly. Hey, you, come here. Get that one.
Yeah.
And after the game, Okada was sent back to the farm team, and manager Norifumi Nishimura was asked about him. He said, the way he's playing now, we got no. We wouldn't have a roster big enough if there were 100 people here.
Yeah, and it was really an unfortunate inning. This took place at Zozo Marine Stadium, and I don't know if you were watching that game or not. I'm assuming you were, because in that inning, they dropped a pop-up that was ruled an infield fly, so that they didn't actually have to catch it because they were runners
right,
on base.
Right,
so
right, right.
They actually would have had four errors in that inning. They had three in the inning, four in the game. It was really bad. And
yeah, no, and Nishimura was on the bench.
At some point,
like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he's dead inside. He's dead inside, because I saw the post game interview with him after they won on Saturday.
Oh.
And he had the smile on, and he looked like he was enjoying baseball on that day. on that day. but on the bench, he's dead inside. And I think at some point, the life just starts to ooze out of whomever is the manager. And they just realize, you know what? It's June and we're already out of the playoff picture. Let's just have fun. You know, let's just enjoy baseball. Baseball's a great sport.
Yeah, let's go back to the, you know, it's kind of, let's go back to the Junichi Fukura and you guys just go out there and play and don't worry too much.
Yeah. Why don't you guys do that?
might be an advantage. I don't know.
Yeah. So like I said, it's not like they could, I thought they couldn't do any worse, and they are in terms of, you know, how to lose games. So for some reason, I believed in the talent, but I'm just hoping the guys get through the season with their sanity. So let's move on.
Speaking of the Buffaloes, and something was really weird today, is they were wearing the old the red Kintetsu Buffaloes uniform.
Yeah, I think they wore
2004.
Yeah, in this series, yeah.
Right, they were wearing the red Kintetsu Buffalo uniforms from the team they merged with after the 2004 season. And it was really freaking me out. I'm watching this big, tall, square-jawed looking foreigner throwing in a Kintetsu Buffalo's uniform, and he really looks like, he reminds me of Jeremy Powell. They're both 196 centimeters.
With the John Wayne chin.
Yeah, I mean, well, not as much as Jeremy has, but yeah, and the short hair, you know, the short cropped hair. And,
gotcha, yeah.
About the same build, and that's Tyler Epler. And they're not wearing the same number because Jeremy wore 25 and Tyler's wearing 42, which was somebody else's number at the time. But just to make it weirder, Jeremy's oldest son's name is Tyler.
Oh, wow.
And I'm watching it, and I'm going, he's a similar kind of pitcher. Basically throws, he throws a decent fastball, locates fastball, curve, change, cutter. He works quickly, throws strikes. I really like this guy. He hasn't done anything yet,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, he throws good pitches. His changeup got hit. But the takeaway from that is, A, this guy, I think, is going to be able to figure it out and pitch really well in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
He's 26 years old, so, you know, he's got a lot to learn. He might have a future back in the majors. I don't know. But he's not really a hard thrower. He threw about 90. But he got into trouble because the Lions were not jumping on everything. They were holding back and waiting for off-speed pitches as they do in Japan, and they flicked some of them and made good pitches on balls out of the zone. And in addition to the fact that I really like this guy and he's going to be fun to watch, I also came away with the feeling that, damn, the Lions are really hard to pitch to.
Yeah, yeah.
They were just tenacious. They didn't miss anything. You know, if he made a mistake, I'm not saying they hit it out of the park, you know, because they're not going to put it in the seats except Yamakawa or Nakamura. But basically, they were just trying to, you know, hit the ball on a line, hit the ball, smash it somewhere hard on the ground if they had to. But if he missed, they were hitting it.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
They hit a lot of his good pitches. Yeah, so
I can't imagine a tougher team to get your first start against.
Yeah, so that really, that was interesting. And so it's not all bad for the Buffaloes, but it's going to be frustrating. But I'm looking forward to seeing more of Tyler Epler.
Okay. All right, now making a four-seam transition, a couple notes. First of all, I asked you to do one quick assignment this past week, in which you did in about 5 minutes, and I said, which team has the most innings pitched by its relief core? And you said number one was the Fighters. Now, this, I think I asked you on Friday, so this is as of Friday. Number one was the Fighters, which makes sense because that's a team that's using openers and maybe not in the
The one and done
starter, but maybe a two and dive or three and dive kind of a guy.
Yeah.
And then the Eagles, who are missing their top two pitchers, that made sense. And then number three was the Yakult Swallows, and that's why I asked you to look it up, mm-hmm. because I was concerned that the Swallows were using so many pitchers for so many innings that once we get to the second half of the season, we're going to see a lot of their young pitchers, and they're going to be getting guys off the street because everybody else, as Pierce Johnson talked about earlier in this podcast about being gassed, I think they're going to be gassed, including these 40-year-old Igarashi we talked about. So I just thought that was an interesting stat, and we'll keep an eye on that and try to update people. And as soon as we talked about that, the Aozora guy on Twitter tweeted out all 12 teams, their number of relief innings pitched and their number of pitches thrown,
the Swallows and Eagles have passed the Fighters innings pitched by their bullpen. So
makes sense. My site has updated here, so I can tell you the Swallows are 3.83 with their relievers, and that's actually not third best anymore. The best in the Central League is 2.87 by the Carp, and they're followed by the Dragons at 3.63. And then you have, they're tied for third. So the Giants and the Swallows at 3.83 with their relievers. So interesting stuff. And then we've got the Players of the Month who were announced this past week. And the CL kind of went as I expected, because I talked about the fact that if you were a Giant, you probably would get the nod. And that's what Hayato Sakamoto did. And that was predictable. But Shun Yamaguchi, I thought if he had another win, or at least he went with zero losses, that he would be the guy. And so the two Giants were named in the Central League. Not such a shock, but again, I was thinking Hiroki Tokota of the Carp should get it, and he did not. But I think the weird thing was in the Pacific League, and obviously Kohei Arihara of the Fighters was kind of a no-brainer. Where are those proverbial headless chickens we talked about last week? They would know that he was the guy. And I thought it was going to be Brandon Laird. I think you thought it might. Brandon Laird had,
because of the batting average.
Because of the batting average, he was at 352 with 27 hits and 5 home runs and 14 RBIs. But they gave it to Hotaka Yamakawa of the Lions, and he only hit 289. And he had fewer hits with 24, but he had 9 home runs and 26 RBIs. So he had twice the home runs, twice the RBIs almost. And I'm guessing that was where they weighted most of their...
Yeah, well, see, that's unusual, because in the past we get so used to them doing the dumbest things that when they do something that makes sense, we're kind of going like, hold a second, what's going on here?
Yeah, you guys don't do that.
I know. So, I mean, it's, the typical, they'll have a guy who hits 250 in a month with 12 home runs and, 25 walks. And they'll pick a guy who hits 400 with all singles who gets thrown out stealing every time he runs the bases.
Yeah, it was just weird. It was weird.
It is. So that's weird. So actually, they picking somebody atypical who's a good choice, which they have been doing. Now, we argued about this before the start of the show, and I said the picks aren't as almost universally bad as they used to be. I mean, whenever they, I mean
that's
this, whenever they
sort
had
a roundabout compliment.
It is. But what I'm saying is they had two guys, one who was really good and one who had a high average.
Gotcha.
They'd always pick the guy with a high average, and now they seem to like take other things into account. And so it used to always be, okay, if a guy hit 400, he automatically won unless two guys hit 400.
Automatic for the people. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah. I want to watch.
So I'm a little. I won't say I'm impressed with their selections, but I'm I'm less disgusted with them.
Hashtag high heat.
So good on you.
Good on you, sort of. We will keep an eye on RBIs and or how much RBIs and home runs seem to be important to these people or this person.
Oh, that's so. More work than I want
to
do.
I'll try to keep an eye on it. How's that?
Okay.
All right. Let's go to fielding questions. This one comes from Glenn in Tokyo, our buddy, and he says, enjoying the podcast as always, gentlemen. I love the interview with Sarfate. So that's like one of the first times we've gotten a comment about the interview, so I'm glad. His comments on the MPB Hall of Fame just screamed out, justice for Tuffy! Justice for Tuffy Rhodes! So the quick question, he says, related to your chat on the depth of roster slash draft approach of SoftBank, etc., what's your take on why some teams seem to be more adept at identifying and signing foreign talent, mainly hitters, than others? As a Tiger fan, I have seen more misses than hits, pardon the pun, while some teams seem to always sign well, Hiroshima, the Fighters. Do these teams have a foreign scout network? It was just on my mind when thinking of Efren Navarro, Matt Haig, Brooks Conrad, Shane Spencer, Lou Ford, Roy White, Mike Greenwell. I've been here a long time. He says, cheers and go Dodgers. So, Glenn, I feel your frustration. And obviously, I don't think you've ever espoused this before, but you're a Tigers fan. So, I think it's extremely tough to go and find imports. I think you have to consider swing path, the speed the guy has, the ability to make adjustments, the ability to hit off speed pitches, off the field situations, the personality of the guy, the family situation. How does he hit with two strikes? Does he pull all the time? Does he hit to right field if he's a right-handed batter? I think there's so many things to actually hit and miss on that it's very difficult. And we talked to former CARP player Dr. Gail Hopkins a long time ago. It was years ago. You might remember this interview. And he was able to identify a flaw in the swing of one of his teammates. And so if he could do that, and he wasn't even a pitcher, I think the pitchers who are trying to get guys out can find those flaws and just attack them. And it just isn't as easy as one might think. I know it's a really difficult team, but here's a thing to do. But here's my idea, and I'll let Jim go. What I've looked at is a lot of the teams that do have success are not willing or can't afford to flush money away. So what they do in an effort to avoid making a bad signing is they look at the things that I mentioned above, the swings path, all these other things, and they also look at the person, and they just look and focus on getting the right person. Whereas some teams, if you look at the Giants, especially in the recent, maybe the past 5 years, they just go out and get a guy, especially if he has a name. And there are just as many players, and probably with the Giants in the past 3 or 4 years, the Garrett Joneses, the Juan Franciscos, the Frederick Cepedas, who didn't pan out at all and didn't even get that much of an opportunity on the first team, than there are Tigers who didn't fail. I guess just because when you're a Tigers fan and you're a fan of one team, you remember all or more of the misses than you do the hits. But the Swallows have had some guys actually who have gone through and not had very much success. I think Lasting's Millage was a great name, and he stayed here for more than 2 years, but he wasn't
productive. Yeah. He had the one really good year, and then that was that.
Right. You had Logan Andrasuk, the reliever who left in a huff, Ross Ohlendorf, and many others there with the Swallows who didn't hit. But
they left in a huff, but they brought the huff back.
So anyway, I just think, yes, they do have these networks, and yes, they do do due diligence, but I think some of the lower budget teams seem to do and put in more time with these guys, and that's why they get it right. And some of the other teams that just throw away money, I'm sorry, have money to throw away, do so. Jim?
I think that's accurate to some degree. The teams, the Giants, it used to be SoftBank Hawks were really swayed Masayoshi Son bought the team. He was really swayed by big names. But the team has really righted that. Teams have areas of scouting strength. You know, the Dragons, area of scouting strength is the Dominican Republic, and that also goes for the Hiroshima Carp, although through a different method, because the Carp Academy is now pumping out players. The Carp Academy is now, instead of looking at 16-year-olds, they're giving second chances to 19 and 20-year-olds who've washed out of single-A ball. And that's why they have... I think they've got three guys from the Carp Academy now who are really good players, Geronimo Francois, Xavier Batista, and Alejandro Mejia. And Alejandro Mejia, he's on the farm team because they got no place to put him. He's a heck of a player. He could play pretty much for every team except that he's a foreigner. If he were Japanese, you know, he'd have 12 teams trying to, you know, play them every day.
Right.
But so their route is a little different. The Dragons' route is the Dominican League, Dominican Winter League is just they have deep connections there. They know who's in and who's out and who's looking for a job and who can play. The Yakult Swallows have Michael Okamura is their guy, and he's got a network of people he talks to in America, I assume. I don't think he sees everybody. You know, he's a one man show, but I think he's got a lot up his sleeve. All of the rest of the teams have scouting networks. Although the Carp also have a scouting network in the States with Scott McLean and former players, people connected with Japan.
Right.
But the most important thing in these equations are trust. Trusting the scouts, trusting the players. And one of the biggest problems the Yomiuri Giants and Hanshin Tigers have had is not trusting the scouts and the players. When they fail, at some point, they can't trust them anymore. It's too expensive to trust them. And so a lot of guys who would have succeeded given longer trials, and again, there's still guys who came in who probably shouldn't have had a chance with them, but a lot of guys who would have succeeded had they got longer trials with the Yomiuri Giants and the Hanshin Tigers washed out because they were playing for the Yomiuri Giants and the Hanshin Tigers. With the Swallows, with the Oryx Buffaloes, with the Hiroshima Carp, with the Nippon Ham Fighters, that has not been a problem. I left out the SoftBank Hawks. Really, their niche is Cuba right now. I mean, today's game, they had home runs by Yurisbel Graciel and Alfredo Despaigne, and a win from Ariel Miranda. And I thought it was poor taste of manager Kimiyasu Kuro not to bring Livon Moinello out in the fifth inning to get the save.
Yeah, it's a rain short in the game. You're mean. Right.
So, so they've got the whole Cuban thing going on. So all the teams do it a little differently, but the big thing is having a manager, having a front office who understands how hard it is to play in Japan.
Okay.
Instead of talking about how hard it is, knowing it's a hard adjustment and trusting in what the scouts tell them.
Yeah.
And you see that with the Carp. And you see that with the Swallows, and you see that with the Fighters. And I think to a large degree, you see that with the Oryx Buffaloes as they've changed their scouts. And I think that's where it breaks down a little bit with Hanshin and with the Giants. I think Lotte also, although I do not know Lotte's scouting operation.
Yeah, and it also takes time to adjust, and you have to have a team that's willing to put you out there and go through the growing pains or the adjustment pains. That it's going to take, because the guys don't always get off the plane and start hitting or start pitching well. So it takes some time. All right, let's hit this one really quick. This is from Igor on Twitter. And he says, after the JBW interview, Andrew Albers, his pitching is getting worse. Our foreign players this season are until now a weak point of the roster. Stefan Romero injured. Chris Marrero totally inconsistent. Albers, very bad start. Joey Meneses, average. What do you think? # high heat. So this came on Twitter. So we've heard this in the past, that there was a curse of sorts, that if you appeared on JBW, you hit the skids. And you know, some guys did and some guys didn't. And you know me, I don't believe in any of these
cursed
stuff.
Yeah, we ruined Neftali Soto for sure.
Well, I don't believe in curses. I think it's ridiculous. It's just an excuse for poor management decisions and all the other things that go into losing for decades or whatever happens. But I don't believe in a curse, so that I'm throwing out the window. But yeah, some guys did poorly. Some guys didn't do poorly after appearing on here. It just happens the way it happens, and we can't control it. It's just like when I put something out there, I can't control the way it's consumed. I can only control what I say. So, but I know you're saying this in a sarcastic way. I know you're kind of joking, Igor, so that's not a problem. Oryx has been struggling before that, and they are going to struggle afterward. It's just, I feel your frustration. It's a frustrating situation. That team has a lot of talent. There's injuries. There's inconsistent play from young players. You bring in some guys who have a little bit of experience like T. Okada, and he lets a ball go through his legs, and he goes back to the farm. It's just, the whole team is confusing. It's frustrating. If I grew my hair long and I was a Buffaloes fan, I'd probably pull my hair out anyway, so I'm glad I keep it short. it's just, you know, it's a Buffalonian way to do things. It's like you have all the talent and all the pieces, and you can't put it together. It's like the jigsaw puzzle that never gets finished. So I don't know what to tell you.
Chris Marrero, like him, Stefan Romero, I do like him, but I know he's basically hurt this year. He's got an issue which he told me he does not expect to heal all year with his back. I think it was his neck. The doctor told him, well, if you were in a job that didn't require any sort of physical stress, it would probably heal in a month or so. And he said, okay, I play baseball. And he's like, okay, yeah. I can't tell you then. So he's going to be like that. And Marrero just came back. And Meneses has had moments where he's looked good. So I think inconsistent is or average is fair. Albers has hit a rough patch. And but again, well, okay, I like Tyler Kemp. Tyler Epler.
But there's so much to like about this team. We saw Kohei Suzuki get his first win. And
the foreign players have not been a force, but I think some of that, I think to some degree that has to go with the front office not believing in the players. Although I don't know, but bad luck sometimes. You know, everybody has bad luck, as John mentioned. The Swallows had three big players, and they signed big contracts, and they made hay because they got, you know, one was Tony Barnett, one was Vladimir Ballantyn, and the other one was Lastings Milledge. Okay, well, Lastings Milledge didn't work out, but the other two, they hit the jackpot. So, yeah, I don't know why, but Oryx has a reputation for doing things for bad, I would have to say poor decision making or inconsistent decision making. I don't know what it is, but it's almost like they change how they're gonna they change their approach to building a team every 6 weeks because yeah. You know, this is the guy we want for the future now, and then 2 months later it's a different guy.
Yep.
Because Marrero can play and Romero can play. And Albers can pitch, and I just think, okay, what's going on here that they're not succeeding? And we tend to point to the organization, not because we know what's going on, but because it seems like a team-wide symptom.
Yeah, the Buffaloes have a lot of talent that is stagnant, doesn't get better.
Yeah, and they did just, and actually they also just changed their scouts. I think the year before. Or last DJ, DJ Holton is one of their scouts now. I think for three years now. And Pedro, the guy I really love is Pedro Valdez is also a scout with them. But again, they cleared out the old guys and they brought in new guys, and that's what Oryx does.
Cleared out the old, brought in the new, but same old results.
So far.
All right. Thank you guys both for the question and the comment. Appreciate it. Anyone else who's got a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag High Heat, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark and visit my website.